Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
What's going on, folks? Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Commanders. Today, I am joined by another one of the Believe Network show hosts and a writer for The Falcoholic. We got Mr. Will McFadden on the other side of the screen. Will, how you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I'm excited to talk about Dan Quinn. I'm excited to talk about the Commanders, a franchise. You know, we have some expectations. Yeah. I am really curious to see how it all shakes out, starting with the draft, which is coming up quickly.
I know the draft is right around the corner, and y'all can stay up to date on all the draft information from plenty of our Believe Network shows across the Believe Network. Make sure y'all like, subscribe, comment, and share this podcast with your friends, and share it with your Falcon friends too, because the Believe in Falcon show is down there with Will McFadden. He's going to keep you in the loop. And I just learned that Will used to work for the team. He was a writer for the team, and I actually got my start, if you will, in Atlanta way back in 2005. I went to the a rookie mini camp. I was down there for all of 20 minutes when I failed a physical. I don't know if you know the name Shepley Hurd. Do you know him?
Yeah, Shep.
Shepley. Yeah. He was the scout that called me when I was in West Texas. And after I was injured and I got rehabilitated, I called him back and I was like, I'm ready to join the team now. And he was like, that's not how it works. You need to get some tape. And so that sent me down my long, circuitous road to make it to the NFL. But it's cool to see that you know Shepley. So if you talk to him, tell him I said, what's up? I don't know if he'll remember my name.
I will have to do that. I sat right behind him last season in the press box. So I was trying to gain any little scouting insights that I could, but he did a really good job of keeping his laptop screen pretty dark. Insider information, unfortunately, but I will have to do that next time I see him.
Yeah, that would be cool. I've told myself, I'm like, I need to write him a letter just to say what's up and thanks for giving a kid a chance out of West Texas A&M. This show is sponsored by betonline.ag. Make sure y'all check out betonline.ag. You could have been betting on the NCAA March Madness. UConn got themselves another championship. Caitlin Clark in Iowa, they didn't win, but she had a hell of a run. They're retiring her number as well. But shout out to South Carolina and Dawn Staley for doing the damn thing. Hell of a run down there in South Carolina. Do you watch much of the NCAA tournaments?
Yeah. I watched the women's championship game with a friend of mine who covers the Falcons for ESPN. We went and just went to a Mexican restaurant, sat at the bar, watched the entire game. The lady next to me, big Iowa fan, cried when they lost.
Oh, goodness.
That was a whole thing. And I'm a Tar Heels fan when it comes to basketball. So it was upsetting to see them lose to Alabama, but I had them in my bracket. So yeah, for betting purposes, it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good. So obviously, folks know Dan Quinn used to be the head coach down there in Atlanta. He's now head coach in Washington. And I wanted to ask Mr. Will McFadden, since he covered the team, what do you expect? What should Commanders fans expect from Dan Quinn, a Dan Quinn-led football team?
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. It was something where when you're riding high, the fan base is going to love it and it's going to resonate. I think that it kind of became a little bit of a punchline for the Dan Quinn era when things didn't go well following their Super Bowl appearance, but really after the 2017 season, because they made it back to the playoffs. They seemed like they were really poised to actually, I thought 2018 was going to be the Falcons' best roster. Yeah. And they had a lot of early injuries that really kind of derailed it. And so then when you start hearing the brotherhood and you start hearing all gas, no brakes, and you start hearing iron sharpens iron, the fan base kind of was like, yeah, that's all well and good, but like, what are you going to do to fix this? And that's where I think things went a little bit wrong for Dan Quinn down here in Atlanta. But there's no question that he loves this game. The players love him. I think he's very smart. I think actually the time away from the game when he took kind of that year off and then in Dallas, probably we're going to see a little bit of a different Dan Quinn as a head coach this time around than we did the first time around in Atlanta. And I think that he himself admitted, I was reading something during that kind of year off where I believe that he kind of understood that the game had changed very, very quickly from when his cover three, which, you know, became very popular in Seattle, really teams just learned how to attack that. And you understood, like, one of the great things about that defensive scheme. And I remember having conversations in the building while I was actually interviewing for the Falcons job. And I was asked, you know, would you rather build a team where you are true to your scheme and you find players to fit your scheme? Or do you want to have a malleable scheme where each year you're kind of reinventing it to fit your players? Hmm. And at the time, I answered, you know, I would rather have the scheme be malleable, the coaches be malleable and adjust to work with what you have on hand. And I was kind of told, no, that's the wrong way to go about it. You want to have what you believe in. You want to have your core principles, and then you want to go find those players who fit exactly that. And I think you can go about it either way. You know, there are coaches who can make do with what they have. I think Bill Belichick is probably the all-time example of that, of somebody who changes and is a chameleon every single year just based on who he has to work with. And I think that, you know, I don't want to speak for Dan Quinn because I haven't talked to him in many years, but we saw the limitations of that kind of approach where if everybody knows your scheme, and it may make it easier to scout players in the draft, to bring in guys in free agency, to generally free up your players to play fast and physical, which was the big mantra down here. You kind of take that mental load off of the players, but on the flip side, offenses know what you're trying to do as well. Yeah. And once they discovered the ways to really beat and attack the cover three, I think he was a little bit slow to adjust. And I think that that's what you saw in kind of the year off. And then in Dallas, the fruits of that labor paid off because obviously those defenses were right back up there. Like, there's no doubt in my mind, he is one of the best defensive minds in this game. The big question is just, is he going to be adaptable? But off the field, personality wise, the players are going to love him. He does love athletes. He likes kind of ballers, right? Yeah. And that's going to be fun. It's going to be, when it's working and when you're winning, you're going to love him.
I wonder how
quickly he'll adjust if things do start going south this time around.
Yeah, I can get you. I see you with that. And I heard him say when he was in the press conference with Washington, he's learned from that, you know, the 28-3 and just his past experiences having a younger OC. And I think there's a lot of similarities now with having Cliff Kingsbury. You know, even though now, you know, Cliff Kingsbury has head coaching experience. There's a lot of former head coaches and a lot of people who've had high ranking positions on staffs that are in Washington right now. So to me, I see Dan setting himself up to not have to worry about everything, right? He can trust his defensive coordinator, Joe Witt Jr., to do things. He can trust Cliff Kingsbury and Brian Johnson to navigate that offense. Hell, he got Ken Norton Jr. to come over from Seattle. He got Larry Izzo to come over from Seattle as well. So there's a lot of credibility across the board. And you got a lot of players that follow him and they love him. And you, when you were talking about the type of player, there's a thing that every Washington fan kind of hates to hear, as Ron Rivera said it all the time, is position flex. Position flex, like a guy that could be a guard or a tackle or a center and a guard. Now that up there in Washington, they want to find good players that are good at what they do, right? A good cornerback, not a guy that's a tweener. But I'm interested to see how he uses these players in Washington, bringing over Dorrance Armstrong, Frankie Louvu from the Panthers as well. Do you think that Dan Quinn is going to try to focus on maybe making a big splash at this quarterback position, Dan Quinn and Adam Peters, I should say, or are they considering maybe trying to trade back and acquire more pieces to help fill in some of this roster? What do you think he'd be more willing to do?
You know, I think it's just going to be really hard to pass up. You know, when you're sitting, it's not the number one spot, but in any other year, we're talking about quarterbacks at number two. Probably would go number one. I mean, even if you're the Patriots, right? And you're like, we'll take the third guy that's left. But like, hey, that's great. We're going to still get a guy who in most other years would be a number one. That to me makes it difficult to pass that up, especially given the situation that the Commanders are in at the position. And I think Dan Quinn is going to understand that, right? Like if you look at the quarterbacks that Dan Quinn has worked with, it's been Russell Wilson. It's been Matt Ryan. It's been Dak Prescott. These are very established at the time. You know, Russell Wilson was young and ascended up throughout his career while Dan Quinn was there, but Matt Ryan was established. Dak Prescott was established. And so I don't think the prospect of working with a rookie scares Dan Quinn off in the slightest, but I do think he understands kind of the intangible qualities that a player has to have at that position. He has to be a leader. He has to be able to, when the chips are down, say, okay, like if I have to shoulder this right now, that's what I've got to do. And I'm ready for it. And I'm going to step up and kind of put it on my shoulders in certain ways. You've got to have that fire, because what Dan Quinn liked to do, and I didn't witness him in Dallas, so I can't speak to that. And I don't know if this is exactly what he'll do in Washington, but at least in Atlanta, during training camp practices, he liked to move around. He liked to almost be a little bit of a position coach. He was mostly working with the defensive line and the linebackers because that's where his background is. But to do that, you have to have a lot of trust in your coaching staff and in your veteran leaders on the team. So guys like Matt Ryan and at the time Kyle Shanahan, but then he moved Raheem Morris over to the offense. You know, now Raheem Morris is back here in Atlanta as the head coach. And if you look at some of the coaches on Dan Quinn's staff, Jeff Ulbrich being a great one, Keith Armstrong, special teams coach, these are really, really smart coaches who also command the room really well and players respect them. So I kind of think that all of that should be taken into account when you're looking at who they could evaluate at quarterback. I know that the Jaden Daniels and Drake May conversation is a big one. I kind of lean the Drake May path, not only because of the air raid offense and Cliff Kingsbury and kind of that aspect of it, but I just, in those kind of intangible qualities, I think that Drake May, coming from the family that he does, being the youngest of just like a group of boys who are super athletic in their own right, like I think that develops that competitive toughness. But if you do look at Jaden Daniels, like he has that background as well, and he's got his own qualities of leadership and the desire to get better. You know, you don't transfer from Arizona State seeking out a program like LSU unless you're saying, hey, I want to be challenged. I want to be coached hard. And he got better. So I think either of those prospects really could work in Washington. Again, personally, I lean a little bit Drake May, but I would be surprised if they do trade back, because again, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't really have much to work with. And Dan Quinn has always had a pretty decent quarterback to work with. And I would expect he understands the importance of that.
Yeah. This team is built out to me to support whatever young quarterback they have. And when you bring over Bobby Wagner, you really start to build out that defense. The secondary is a little bit questionable at this time because they haven't, they let Kendall Fuller walk. You've got Emmanuel Forbes, first round pick from last year, Benjamin St. Juice coming back. Cam Curl was left, but you bring in Jeremy Chinn. So secondary is something that's big for me as to how they're going to build that out. And they're doing a lot of top 30s with a lot of lesser known players. And I had to go back and look at the Legion of Boom defense, and they had one first rounder, and who was the safety that fell out of Texas? Lordy, I forgot his name.
Chancellor we're talking about the other one, Earl Thomas.
From Earl Thomas out of Port Arthur, Texas. He was the one first rounder. You had sixth rounder Richard Sherman, smart player. You had Byron Maxwell, Cam Chancellor. So a lot of guys that are they worked well together. So I'm trusting Dan Quinn to put together a scheme and Joe Witt to put together a scheme to get the most out of those guys. But you mentioned that quarterback position, talking about Drake May. Number one, are you picking Drake May because you're a UNC fan? Is that what
not gonna lie, that's a little bit of I mean, when I was initially Arthur Smith when he was down here and expecting him to still kind of be the coach, this like this point last year, and looking ahead at the quarterbacks, I was like, all right, well, Arthur Smith went to North Carolina, TJ Yates, who's still here on staff, but was on staff with Arthur Smith. He went to North Carolina and played quarterback. So I was like, all right, is this very obvious? Let me just go ahead and start looking into Drake May. And yeah. Jane Daniels came on strong in this last year. But I, you know, again, I think that it's the Justin Herbert comparison to me is very legitimate. Mm-hmm. And if you see that Justin Herbert, like I think even given the lack of overall team success that the Chargers have had, we're all in agreement, I think, across the league that like Justin Herbert is a very good quarterback. And if that's your comparison, and I know Jane Daniels has gotten some comparisons to Lamar Jackson, but to me, that is, you have to build a very specific offense around a player like that to really maximize his skill set. And I don't know if it allows you to have the full kind of menu at your disposal that you maybe could if you've got, and Drake May can run too, and he can do some of those things. I know Jane Daniels has an incredible arm and also can put the ball all over the field. And he does have that added dimension of just like insane speed. So I don't really think you can go wrong. Although history has told us that you definitely can go wrong and probably will go wrong. But yeah, for me, it is Drake May just a little bit. And again, I think that everybody, when Cliff Kingsbury was hired, it was like a lot of people were talking about Caleb Williams. But again, Drake May played in an air raid offense. So there's that familiarity there as well for him.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I look at the coaching staff of the offensive side, Cliff and Brian Johnson coming over from the Eagles. That's what makes me lean to Jaden Daniels. I can say the reason why I'm not up on Drake May is because of the UNC connection, because you just traded away Sam Howell, who came from UNC.
I've wondered about that.
Call me superstitious, all right? Call me superstitious. I don't really like the fact of going and dipping back into that well that didn't do us too good. And then you think about the quarterback before, Trubisky, UNC guy.
Another UNC. It's like if you go to a pizza place and you get food poisoning, you're going to be a little bit hesitant to call that pizza place the next time you're craving pizza. So I totally understand where you're coming from. And I've had kind of the same thought and reservation to be like, is the third time really going to be the charm for the Commanders here? Or, will that scare them off?
Yeah. Now let's talk about some familiarity that these two organizations have with each other, especially in your quarterback room. You just signed Kirk Cousins, a little bit ago, beginning of free agency, $180 million contract coming off of an Achilles injury. We saw what he did in Minnesota, being able to, take that team, lifted him up, I guess, and have some stability at the position. He had some strong years in Washington. What do you expect from Kirk Cousins going down there in this offense with Drake London and Kyle Pitts? And then you got Bijan Robinson, so many weapons around there. I'm kind of scared that it may be a Matt Ryan 2.0. Do you think that Kirk Cousins is going to be enough for this Falcons offense?
I think that given what we saw from Desmond Ridder last year, that Matt Ryan 2.0 doesn't sound too bad at this point. I think that just having somebody who can be trusted to deliver the ball on time, deliver it where it's supposed to go, and when things get funky, there's not going to be panic, right? Yeah. And that's kind of what you saw from Desmond Ridder at times last year, and that's understandable, right? He was making his first full season as a starter and is still a young player, and I hope that he gets better and improves while he's there in Arizona, but you just kind of needed a very steady set of hands behind the wheel, given how much they have invested draft capital in these offensive weapons. It's like, going out and buying the top of the line car and then putting a 16-year-old behind the wheel. Mm. And it's like, well, they're probably not going to be the right person to get as much out of this car as you would hope, or they're going to wreck it, just driving down the road because they haven't done this enough. Kirk Cousins has done this a ton. And I think that, a lot of people talk about his age. A lot of people talk about coming off of that injury. And the injury thing should be, that's a real concern. However, he's not a scrambling quarterback. He can move in the pocket if need be, but that's a little bit different than really having to move around on that Achilles.
Yeah.
I think Lamar actually, right. Or even Jalen Hurts or, what have you. The main issue with maybe the Achilles is the fact that it is going to be on his kind of dry foot where he has to really propel his momentum and get that torque off of that. But he suffered the injury in week 8 last year. Expect him to be back in training camp and kind of move along from there. But if you look at his age, he's still a couple of years, if not more, away from really that cliff. And I'm a big believer that actually, if you're a pocket passer, your best years probably come in your early to mid to late 30s, because at that point you have seen enough. Yeah. You aren't going to be rattled by what a defense is going to throw at you. And you just have that self-confidence that comes from those reps, and people start looking at you as the face of the franchise, that leader. You're not having to prove yourself. So he is still in that prime, in my opinion. And that's where I think you're going to hopefully have a little bit of a rising tide lifts all boats situation. And if they can get the best season from Kyle Pitts that they've had, because his best season was with Matt Ryan the year before Matt Ryan did fall off the cliff in Indy. And Drake London looks like an ascending player, but there's been a little bit of a cap on his ceiling purely because he's had Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder throwing him the ball.
Yeah,
I think that if Kirk Cousins is able to make the right reads, get the ball out in time, put it in a catchable area where then players can do stuff after the catch with it, that's where, sure, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Justin Herbert at this point in his career. But he was playing at an MVP level last year before he got hurt.
Yeah,
if he is 80% of that last year, of what he was last year, the Falcons will be more than set at the quarterback position to maximize kind of the investment that they've made. And then the defense did turn around last year in a big dramatic way. Unfortunately, the offense just wasn't able to get it together, but I expect Kirk Cousins to be the right guy to get it together. And it's only realistically a 2-year deal, so they're not tied to this thing forever. But it does start their window right now, which makes the draft very interesting for Atlanta.
Yeah, you think that bringing him in at least brings him up to the top of the division. You know, they're obviously going to have to compete with Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans down there in the Bucs. I mean, looking at TJ Hockenson's stat, he had 960 yards and 5 touchdowns last year. You think that having Kirk Cousins and Kyle Pitts, you'd expect maybe an 1,100, 1,200-yard season from Kyle Pitts. That could be something that would be exciting. I want to get to the draft now. I want to get to the draft. We'll talk about this a bit, because this is a time of the year where everybody's trying to put some bad news out about a player. Maybe they can have his stock drop a little bit. This person's a diva. This person, you know, that's a diva. We're thinking Washington's going to be at 2. Atlanta sits at 8. Where is Atlanta going to go? What are you going to do? You're going to get the hometown kid, Brock. But well, you don't need a tight end. So
if Arthur Smith was here, that would be my pick. I would be putting in cement and I would just be on a beach somewhere, because I wouldn't have to worry about it. I would know who they're picking. But
right. What are you thinking that Atlanta's going to try to do?
You know, the more that I think the clear need is edge rusher. It's been edge rusher for 12 years since John Abraham retired. But the more that I think about it, even though, you know, Dallas Turner's is a great player, Jared Verse, great player, Liatu Latu, great player, I don't know if they need to necessarily take that player at 8, right? Because I think there's a very strong chance. In fact, I would be surprised if the first 7 picks aren't on the offensive side of the ball. So Atlanta will have their pick of any defender that they want at number 8. What I think that they would be smart to really strongly consider, given that they have now invested a lot of money in one player in Kirk Cousins, which was not their plan this time last year. There's a reason they went with Desmond Ridder. It's because they wanted to kind of reallocate their assets, because towards the end of the Dan Quinn, Thomas Dimitroff era, they just had too much money wrapped up in too few players. And that really created kind of like a stars and scrubs type of roster, where you had to rely on your draft picks to play big minutes and play really, really well. And that magnified the misses, because they weren't able to really address the key needs on their roster through free agency. Terry Fontenot, that is what he's all about. He wants proven players that he knows at the NFL level what they can do. And that's how we're going to actually put band-aids on some of these things. We're not going to try to project and hope. We're going to go get the guys that we know can do the job, and then we're going to draft for upside. So given that the Falcons have kind of a better overall roster. But now that they have, again, kind of spent so much money on just Kirk Cousins, and if you look at next season's salary cap, five players are going to account for essentially like 45% of Atlanta's cap, and that's not where they've wanted to be. Yeah. So I think they would be wise to look at any trade back possibility, because they're going to need more younger, cheap players, not necessarily for this year. Although, again, if they're making a push over the next two seasons, because that's kind of when they've started their window right now with Kirk Cousins, they're going to want guys who can contribute, but they also are just going to need to add some younger contracts or cheaper contracts for the foreseeable future, because you're going to have to make some hard decisions with guys like Jake Matthews and Grady Jarrett in the near future, sooner rather than later. So if the Falcons can move back from eight to, I know, you know, the Vikings are a team everybody's talking about trading up. I think they're probably going to trade up much higher than the Falcons are currently. I think, you know, if you look at Arizona or if you look at LA, like those are two obvious spots. Either of those teams, and in my most recent mock draft for Believe, which is on sportsillustrated.com, I had the Chargers trading back with the Vikings and then trading back up with Atlanta to go grab Rome Odunze one spot before the Bears. And I think something like that could definitely be on the table. And the Falcons honestly could move back even further than 11 if they need to. Given that, again, all the defensive options I expect to be on the table for Atlanta at number eight, if they really like Leatu Latu, you could probably get him at like 16, you know? So that is where you could kind of have your cake and eat it too if you're Atlanta. But I would say that the biggest needs right now currently are certainly edge. And a lot of people like Dallas Turner because, you know, of just the athleticism, the Will Anderson comparison. I do think in this defensive scheme, he would make a lot of sense. Personally, I really like Latu. I think he's the most pro-ready. And I think he would step in. And again, on that shorter timeline that the Falcons are facing, he can move all over. Jared Verse would make a lot of sense in like a Ron Rivera defense. Yeah. But I don't know if he's quite that fit. And then outside of those guys, any of the cornerbacks, I wouldn't be shocked if you see like Cooper DeJean be the Falcons pick if they trade back to 17.
Boy, that'd be something. That would be
something like that, right? So it's going to be defensive side of the ball. I think they could add a receiver maybe on day two at some point and just kind of continue to build out that group. But really, it's edge and corner now that they've gotten quarterback figured out, which in hindsight looks pretty smart, because I think they wanted to avoid everything we're seeing right now where it's like, oh man, Denver's going to trade up or Minnesota's going to trade up or all these teams need a quarterback. And they were probably smart to avoid that.
Yeah. I'm joined by Will McFadden. He's from Believe in Falcons and writer for the Falcoholic. You talk about all these teams trading up. I ran scenarios just on a previous episode of the show. If Washington targeted other quarterbacks to maybe get them off of two. I saw one tweet that said, Washington inquired about getting Chicago's one, but I hadn't seen any, you know, proof or anything behind that. But I would like to see Washington maybe dance around a little bit and acquire more first round picks. I think there's enough quality players in here. And you're talking about managing the cap. I think Adam Peters has done an amazing job getting low cost, high value players to build out this roster. And some of those young corners, I'd love to see them show up in Washington as well. This J.J. McCarthy name comes up a little bit. Is he going to be in the top, you know, do you think he's going to be a top five pick, or is he going to be somebody that maybe around the, maybe 6 to 10 range?
It certainly seems like right now, based on all the reporting, that he would go in the top five. And I think that he's an interesting player that I think I'm a little bit higher on than the general consensus, because even though he wasn't asked to shoulder the load, to me, that's like a team thing. That's a Jim Harbaugh problem. That's not a JJ McCarthy problem, because at the times when he was asked to step up in bigger moments in some of the biggest games, I mean, I don't know if there's an NFL game short of maybe Pittsburgh and Baltimore at their peak, or, you know, a crazy pivotal playoff game. Like the Eagles seem to be in all these tough matchups all the time with all the nation watching or what have you. And I hope that the Commanders can get back in there, because it's all like they're a really fun team to watch when they're playing on Sunday Night Football and all of that. But there's probably not a more stressful environment than Michigan, Ohio State the last few years. Man. And he balled out in some of those games. And so I think that the knocks against him have less to do with him and more to do with the situation and the scenario. So for that reason, he's still young. I think that if you come in and be a little bit of that, like the way Matt Ryan was as a rookie or the way Russell Wilson was early in his career, and you build a team around him and you ask him to say, hey, make us 7 plays a game. And then outside of that, like trust the system, trust the offense, deliver the ball where it needs to do. He can do all of that, in my opinion. Now we need to see him do it at the NFL level, but that's true of every player in this draft, right? So when you're talking about projection and what he can do, I'm a big fan of JJ McCarthy. So if you are Minnesota and you're looking for that next person after Kirk Cousins, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think that this is all based on projection, right? But if he goes 2 to the Commanders, then that's where he was supposed to go. Right. That was like a big thing that I learned inside of the building is like all these mock drafts, these are exercises. When teams are stacking their boards, it could look totally different than the way that we're all talking about it right now. And that's partially by design. Nobody wants everybody to know what they're doing. If that's where he goes, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's where he was supposed to go because that's where he was taken. Yeah. And, you know, he's a player that I would not be shocked in the slightest if in 4 years we're looking back on this class and it's kind of one of these situations where you're like, okay, wow, the order was a little bit off, right? Yeah. You know, like these players are good, but Josh Allen is clearly the best player in that 2018 quarterback class and he didn't go number one overall, right? So that could be the case here with JJ McCarthy. He's a little bit young. I think that Zach Wilson as a player is kind of like still a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth and they're not like they're not one-to-one but they're like similar-ish, so he's probably like taking some flack based on that. But I like JJ McCarthy a lot as a prospect. I would be shocked if he goes outside of the top 10. I would expect him to go in the top 5 just because he's a good enough quarterback, and quarterback is the position that you take over anything else if you need one.
You know, I've been on the camp of saying if you're gonna get him, I wouldn't want it at 2. I think just from the hype of Heisman Trophy winner, you know, Jaden Daniels, the electricity that he has, the comparison of Lamar, but then I looked at Joe Burrow's stats as well coming up his Heisman season. Mm-hmm. Jaden is a mix, right? He can run for 1,100 yards. He's gonna throw for enough as well, but I think that if you're going to get McCarthy, you can back up a little bit. I mean, if he goes in the top 5, like you said, if he goes there, great. But I know that Washington can't go too far down to if they want to still get a quarterback. So we'll see what happens there. Give me this. I want to hear your one underrated or unsung hero that's up in this draft that maybe you have your eyes on that either, A, that you would love for them to be in Atlanta, or you just really think that this guy is going to be a ball player.
I can give you so a cornerback sticking actually with Michigan. Mike Sainristil is somebody who I really, really like. I think he'll probably go in the second round just because the cornerback class is really, it feels bunched together, and you're going to see a lot of those guys go mid to late first round. He could be one of them, again, depending on like beauty is in the eye of the beholder type of deal. But he is a former receiver who switched over to defense. He's got great ball skills, which is actually like if we're talking about Dan Quinn and what he's going to look for, that's pretty high on the list. We had Jalen Hawkins was a draft pick down here. He was also a former receiver who switched to safety at Cal. He likes these, you know, longer, bigger players with that attitude of we're going to attack the ball, that ball's mine. And that's Mike Sainristil. And he also has, you know, at least from what I've heard, never met the kid, never talked to the kid, but is a great locker room presence, is, you know, the coaches love him, all of that, a real workhorse. So as we're looking at second round prospects, you know, there's a pretty strong package there that he offers that if, you know, as I look at Atlanta, they didn't turn the ball over a ton outside of Jesse Bates last year. He would make sense from that aspect. But if we're talking about Washington as well and knowing what Dan Quinn values and knowing kind of what Joe Witt, like, they would love that attacking mindset, having somebody who is going to be aggressive to go after the ball. So Mike Sainristil is not a guy that is getting a lot of that conversation in the same way that a lot of these top corners are. But I think that, again, when all said and done, he's got a chance to have a pretty great pro career.
I like that. You talked about former receiver Trevon Diggs, former receiver at Alabama. He got switched over to DB, got a really big contract with Dallas. Deron Bland, I want to say he played receiver before, and he just had crazy amount of interceptions and pick sixes. So I do say this. I trust Dan Quinn and Joe Witt. Whoever they draft at corner is going to be a good player. Like, he's there for a reason. They already have said they want somebody who's going to turn the ball over and get the ball back for that offense and give it to this young quarterback. Let's see. Last little thing here. Do you have anything you want to share with Commanders fans? Maybe they want to, you know, tune into you on your episodes or your shows. What do you got for the Commanders fans that we can leave them with this?
Yeah. So you guys can follow me on Twitter at Will McFadden. My writing is at the Falcoholic, as you've mentioned. I'm currently working on a mailbag piece that'll go up later today. The next episode that we got coming up on Believe in Falcons, I'm going to be talking with Jordan Rodrigue of The Athletic, who does an amazing job covering the Los Angeles Rams. So just, we'll get a third team in the mix here. Why don't we do that? But just going to talk to her a little bit about Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris and kind of the influence of the Rams coming over here to Atlanta. So if you're just interested in the way that offense evolves and the game of football has evolved, I think the Rams have been at the forefront of that for the last half decade or so. And you're starting to see those influences spread out around the league. So it'll be a little bit about the Falcons. It'll be mostly about the Falcons, but we're also going to veer into probably some of that more just philosophical football talk. So if that sounds interesting to you, come find us on Believe in Falcons.
I love that stuff, man. I mean, all those guys you mentioned are in this picture, that famous 2011. They keep saying 2013, but that 2011 to 2013 Washington staff, Raheem Morris was there, Sean McVay was there. All these great coaches that are heading up spots got out of Washington, but ownership change is different now. So
for sure. And I can give you one other interesting nugget about Dan Quinn. Is I remember talking to him, I believe it was training camp of 2018, may have been 2019 though. And it was right after, you know, Sean McVay had really exploded onto the scene in LA. And we were talking about how do you kind of defend an offense like that has so many pieces and so many moving parts before the ball is snapped. Because again, his defense is a little bit more about simplicity and they wanted to create confusion just before the ball snapped offensively. And so I was like, how do you coach your guys to kind of deal with that? And at the time, and I mean, I think we've seen that this is the way that thinking has evolved defensively, which is why I credit Dan Quinn with being an incredibly smart coach. And he knows and understands where the game is going and the cycles and everything like that. But he said, now it's all about creating confusion for the quarterback post snap, right? Mm. If the offense is kind of taking away the defense's ability pre-snap to move around, to get in the face, to kind of create some of that second guessing for the quarterback, because now the defense is the one that has to watch what's going on and they're not able to necessarily be the aggressor in that way, then you got to do it post snap. And so you've got to line up in a way and say, all right, here's what we're giving you. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Yeah. When the ball's and that kind of separates the best quarterbacks from everybody else. So that's just an interesting little wrinkle where, like, Dan Quinn is clearly watching what's going on around the league. The LA influence, again, is real. I think it's inspired a lot of these defensive innovations. And I would expect to see, I'm really curious, I'll put it this way, to see what the defense looks like in Washington this season.
That's refreshing to hear, because there are too many times where this past season you would see the defense for Washington be in a position like, why are you leaving Tyreek Hill one-on-one with a safety playing press at
good
that
question.
Like, that's not smart. I get it that you want to challenge your guy here and there, but don't just sit back and get your head beat in. Adjust a little bit, you know, show some wrinkles and put something different out there. But all in all, man, I appreciate you taking the time, Will. Y'all check him out. Follow him on Twitter, on X. Check out the show at Believe in Falcons and check out his writing as well. So, Will McFadden, appreciate you coming through. And guys, we'll catch y'all on the next episode of Believe in Commanders. But make sure y'all head on over to betonline.ag. Follow us on social media, Believe Commanders, XIG, YouTube, and TikTok. We still haven't done any TikTok dances over there just yet, but I don't think we're going to start it. But hey, y'all be good. Take it easy. We'll catch you on the next episode of Believe in Commanders.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.